Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Yes, to one of our most popular segments on Open House, the human condition, with our resident guru, clinical psychologist Lynn Worsley, whose fame, I might say, now extends worldwide. We had a post on our Open House community Facebook page the other day from Andrew in Scotland. Hi, Andrew. He says, I'm an Aussie living in Scotland and practicing as a counsellor 2 days a week. I listen intently to Lynn and her valuable slots and share bits in our group supervision time. I hope these segments never stop. Same here, Andrew. I don't know about
Hi,
Lynn.
Andrew.
Welcome to 2012, Lynn Worsley.
Thank you for having me.
Wonderful
again.
To have you here. We're kicking off a new set of conversations with Lynn tonight on how relationships function. We've had quite a chat about this in the Open House cave. And I reckon this will be really interesting, even to the way our brain physically works differently depending on who we're relating to. Lynn, what have you got planned for us for this?
Okay, Lee. Look, I've been really busy over the holidays doing some training in some relatively new and some cutting-edge work that looks at how we connect with others, starting from early infancy and taking us into adulthood. The work touches on the study of the neuroplasticity of the brain, and I think over the next 5 years or so, it's a term that we're going to hear over and over. I'd really like to talk about the implications of the neuroplasticity of the brain over the next 4 weeks and how it might affect how we parent, how we teach and learn, how we manage our siblings from childhood and adulthood, and how we manage our love relationships.
So I've been talking about humility earlier tonight. I'm so humble I wouldn't have a clue what neuroplasticity means. So please explain, our guru.
Okay, now the neuroplasticity of the brain refers to the brain's ability to change itself after damage and also during development. So, like, we've got amazing technology now, and it traces the activity in the brain. And if you like, I'll give you a bit of an anatomy lesson. It might help you to understand the brain.
Yes, thank you. So I do think this is going to be really interesting, knowing a bit about where you're heading, but also quite thought-provoking.
Yes.
Literally, I suppose. I guess.
Okay, so in our brains, we've got a number of different pathways that take signals to different parts of our body, receiving signals and then sending messages. And these pathways have a multitude of neurons, and they take the messages along the pathways. It's a bit like an electrical circuit. Now, what's interesting is that the pathways are there when we're born, but the neurons need to be stimulated in order to send messages, which they then develop more neurons in response to, which then develop more neurons, etc.
Yeah. So does this mean that if we don't stimulate the ones that we have, we don't develop more?
That's exactly right.
Okay. Yeah.
It also means that if you don't use them, you'll lose them. And so the study of neuroplasticity, it's fascinating work and very relevant to psychology because we see how people develop patterns of thought and behaviour according to their experiences. But what's more important is that there is a possibility of deliberately changing patterns much more effectively.
Wow.
So what's really evident is, say, when someone has a stroke and a part of their brain is blocked, what happens then is that you can actually train the neurons to have a different pathway so you can use a different part of the brain to do the same function.
It's amazing stuff.
Yeah.
So then connect that amazing stuff with how we connect with each other.
Okay, so let's get back to the point, Lynn.
Yeah.
The point is, the fascinating work that I've recently been doing is the study of how a baby learns to interact with their caregiver. So most often we're studying mothers,
yep.
But there's certain patterns of connections that set the pathway for future relationships throughout life. And this work's being led by a professor called Pat Crittenden, and she's based in Europe, and it's called the Dynamic Maturational Model of Attachment. But anyway, that aside, most people have heard of how attachment occurred during infancy, and there's a lot of studies particularly started in Russia after the Second World War, where orphan babies who were left on their own for long periods in their cots sadly didn't thrive and they were developmentally delayed. And that's where the term failure to thrive came from.
Okay.
And interestingly, from these really sad studies, the babies who were closest to the doorways were bigger than the babies that were at the end of the room.
How amazing.
Yeah. So the babies who experienced more people walking past were more stimulated and therefore they got bigger.
Wow.
And so with the study of the brain, we now know why that happened. Like the baby's brains are geared up to attract the adult to connect with them. So the baby needs to have an adult connection in order to develop. And that can be stimulated with mobiles and bright toys, but that's not enough. The baby mostly needs the face of an adult who is present with them, someone who really gets them.
Yep.
And what's really interesting, and I think it's really important, is that development is evident throughout the whole of life, and the neurons continue to change themselves. So, Lee, we haven't stopped. Basically, we're still going.
I feel that.
Yes. So when a child's born, they've got an inbuilt mechanism to evoke the caregiver to protect them. So if mum and dad are ambivalent or distracted by a mobile phone or Facebook or TV, or they're feeling flat or discouraged, the baby can pick up that they're not switched on to them. And so the baby exhibits behaviour that attracts their attention and makes them fuss a bit more.
Like baby from what age? Like
from the moment they're born.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. But if the mum and dad are unpredictable or have angry bursts and are very controlling, the baby can react by becoming very complacent or compliant so they don't raise the emotions of the parent. So that because it keeps them safer.
Mm.
The difficulties we can see is that if the interaction of the parent and the child isn't enough, they don't manage to get in sync with each other.
Don't you feel the weight of parenthood long
yes,
after
yes.
it started? Oh, dear. So how can we work out how to get that kind of sync with babies then?
So it's very complex, but the message is really clear. The baby needs a level of connection with mum or dad to develop the neurons for complex interactions later in life.
Okay.
But the next point is even clearer. The mum and the dad also need to connect with the baby so they can develop the neurons that help them to develop as parents. So the baby trains the parents as well as the parents train the child.
There's a fair bit of that that goes on.
Yes.
But it extends beyond parents and children?
Yes.
Yeah.
It can also relate to the child and a teacher, the child and a grandparent, the child and a mentor and other relationships. And the importance of a deep, meaningful connections leave a blueprint in our brain which is now measurable and changeable. And the brain changes itself in every single interaction.
I knew this was going to be wonderful stuff. Mm. What happens then when there has been that kind of damage or difficult relationships,
yeah.
damaged relationships.
So let's put out there to begin with that nobody out there in here has a perfect relationship. Everyone gets hurt. So we're all imperfect and we've got baggage, but some people have more hurt than others and some people react more than others. But what we know is that the neurons actually create a pathway to protect us from being hurt, and often we have a learned response that may be from the very first week of life and from a difficult relationship at school or something, which sets a scene of automatic response in the brain that might mean that we push people away or we react in a very hardened way when we're trying to keep ourselves secure.
Yeah.
And it's hard when we become adults and we find ourselves with all these unhelpful patterns in our relationships. But the good news, there is good news.
Thank you.
Is that when you see the patterns and you start practicing doing things differently, it's possible to change the brain, just like you can change it if you have a stroke.
Wow. Can you give us an example of how you might be able to change that pattern of interaction?
Okay. I'll give you an example that I had. I had an amazing experience in 2005 when I went to a workshop with Patch Adams.
The real one.
Patch Adams in the US. The workshop was on love. And it was in response to his observation that people had forgotten how to show love. And during the workshop, Patch got us to experience connection and sharing with complete strangers. He paired us up with people we didn't know, and we had to stand there facing them, look them in the eyes, and tell them we loved them. So most of us started giggling and joking around.
I'm sure.
And that was just because we were really nervous.
A whole lot of new relationships starting up there.
Yeah, and the level of intimacy was just like too threatening.
Too right.
But he got us to practice really caring for each other for a total of 3 minutes.
Okay.
So we had to look each other in the eyes and hold the gaze, and we had to take away any preconceived notions that we had about this person, and we really had to care for 3 minutes. It was really hard.
Mm.
A lot of people broke down, and many people found the whole experience just incredibly intense.
Wow.
Even though it was only for 3 minutes.
Wow.
Now, at the end of the exercise, people reflected that the intensity of the experience was high for both those doing the caring and those doing the receiving. Most people said it was a foreign experience, and looking someone in the eye, even their own children or spouses, was usually a fleeting look, not held for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, for me, it was an experience that I have deeply in my brain, and I know during that time I felt and experienced the love of a stranger.
Wow.
Now, it happened in a workshop. How valuable would that be if we practice that daily with our loved ones?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's likely to change how we respond to each other. Now, I know when I'm working with families or couples, getting them to touch hands and look each other in the eye when they have something difficult to say means they say things with much more compassion, even when they're angry. And it often leads to a very different response from them, from each other.
Yeah.
So it's likely that if we looked at the brainwave patterns, it would show that the neurons taking a different pathway when we're touching and looking at each other than if we hadn't.
Amazing thing. Can I just ask quickly to wrap up, how does this relate to any Christian experience perhaps?
Okay, now Christianity isn't a religion. It's a relationship.
Too right.
And the significance of a relationship with someone who is perfect and sees right into our souls and still loves the core of our being is absolutely incredible. So a lot of people talk about their experience of a relationship with God as being a transformational experience.
Yes.
And they say they think differently or they relate differently to others or they see themselves differently. But no one has actually done a study of the brainwave pattern after conversion. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
But my guess is that the pathway is different. And the brain changes as a result of the interaction with God through prayer, through meditation, and through reading the Bible. I'd also guess that it's a relationship that needs to be continual in the interaction with time spent with God. And it's just like, and if you can imagine when a mother holds a baby just at her arm's length and she looks that baby intensely in the baby's eyes and the baby looks back and there's that beautiful, beautiful sharing of smiles and laughter and that heightened joy. I like to think that God holds us out there at his arm's length and he looks us in the eye and he smiles and there is a joy between us.
My heart's melting.
I would think would be absolutely
transformational. The last couple of days, my little grandchildren, Reuben, James and Nathan Hartley Hatcher, have been visiting us from Darwin and we've been doing a fair bit of that. And it's just wonderful.
It is.
So clearly for both. This is just wonderful stuff. Can you give us a quick snapshot of where we'll be heading in the weeks to come with this?
Okay, I'd like to look at the function of relationships. So what we've talked about is how these relationships change our brain wave functioning. But how does the actual behaviour that we have in relationships change the function of relationships? Mm-hmm. So that might look at the relationships between parent and child. It might look at siblings. It might look at parents, at teachers and friends. So we're heading in that direction over the next 4 weeks.
Yeah, across the whole realm of relationships. Mm. Lynn Worsley, I knew it was going to be a treat, and it has been. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.